the Conversations with Puppet Labs podcast. Welcome back to the Conversations with Puppet Labs podcast. My name is Kent Bai here at Puppet Labs. This podcast is our second podcast channel where our focus is a little bit different than our community podcast. Here we're talking to folks about what it means to be a change agent in IT operations. Today I'm going to be speaking with Kelsey Hightower from CoreOS, and he used to also work within the financial industry. Kelsey talks about why it's so important for change agents to identify the right problem rather than just any problem. He talks about being a team player, as well as the surprising insight of the mindset of a change agent is not that different than the mindset of somebody who is just about to leave their job. So with that, let's go ahead and dive in.
My name is Kelsey Hightower. I'm currently a developer advocate slash toolsmith engineer at CoreOS. And how would I define a change agent? I think it's a person or even a collection of people that produce results that have a positive impact on an end goal. So if we take that into your classical working at a company or any type of organization, this would be a group of people or individual that understands the goal of the team, and they'll have the capabilities of actually producing results. And that's not necessarily solving the problem all in one shot, but being able to take that slice and, you know, deliver some value. And actually, once you have results, I think you can actually say you're a change agent.
And so how have you seen that play out in your experience? Maybe you could give a specific example of taking one slice and then how that eventually sort of grew and grew.
You know, I think when you're in a position to be a change agent, it comes with a lot of responsibilities. So unfortunately, for most organizations, a lot of people are very risk averse. No one wants to put their job on the line because, you know, there is some accountability involved with making a suggestion or suggesting that we do things a different way. And a lot of times, you know, in IT especially, things can get pretty heated. You know, there's always multiple ways to solve a problem. And a lot of times if you suggest this is the way we should do it, then it comes with the responsibility of seeing it through. And you may not necessarily have all the support of the people to do it, right? You may have a divided crowd where one half wants to do it one way. And what I've seen in the past is where you'll get into a group setting and then there'll be a meeting and there'll be a long discussion. So it's very easy to highlight problems. Like, here's a problem, here's why we can't do X. So it's really easy to get involved in the conversation. And usually a lot of companies do have a forum where you can just speak up and not necessarily accountable for providing a solution. So for me, it's like I've always been in a situation where you listen and you absorb the information and then you suggest the actual goal that you can achieve. So one example would be I worked in a large financial institution. And when I got there, I was one of the newest members on the team. That's what happens when you're a new hire. And you see the way people are doing things. And I think it's important to kind of figure out why they're doing what they're doing, either it's out of fear. A lot of times it's lack of skill. Some people have never operated at a different scale before. So you look at and you try to learn what people are doing, and then you try to be opportunistic about it. You need to know where's the pain points. Solving a problem that no one cares about probably won't deliver the proper change or get you credibility. So I think our number one issue there was deploying bits on disk. Right. So the formula there was, you know, you have the nightly change windows, people come in at midnight, you try to pick a very safe time period to have less impact on infrastructure, less impact on customers. And then you do this very strict change process, right? You deploy this first, then we test it thoroughly, you know, no automation, a lot of humans. And you come in, you just say, let's just fix one part of that situation. Let's just automate it. Maybe you update the scripts. And ideally what happens is if it's successful, you know, probably multiple times in a row, then people will accept that as a new way of doing things, but only after you've proven it successful.
And so I'd imagine as you're going in as a new person, you have a fresh perspective and you're challenging a lot of the assumptions that were there. And so it sounds like you were in that position. And so maybe talk about like what happened after that in terms of either the results that you were able to show or what the specific use case was that you were able to show that this was a successful like first step towards bringing about change.
Yeah, I think it depends on where you are in your personal career, right? If you're new, a lot of times you'll be new and naive. So you'll have probably good suggestions, but they're very naive. They don't take into account why you can't do them. Either A, it will be too expensive, or you can actually have, if it fails, it could bankrupt the company. So a lot of times you have to have some type of perspective that usually comes with experience or at least collaborating with others with more experience. If you're in a situation where you can see the difference and you know what the value is, you have to couple it to something very concrete. Maybe it was a result of an introspective or something where this is a high item thing that we need to take care of. And if you can solve that problem, I think people look at that line item and then they move the next line item up the list. And then naturally people will come to you to see if you can solve the next line item. Maybe you have a similar format that you can do that was for the successful thing. And a lot of times one success is not enough. You know, a lot of times it's like, all right, well, that worked. In the past, a lot of things worked, but they didn't continue to work. This is why we're in the situation we're in now. So consistency, and a lot of times you're going to have to do a little bit more work than everyone else. That just comes part of the territory. So you almost have to research the issues through and through, because a lot of times in production is not the place to experiment. You're going to have to either create your own sandbox environment. So I think once people get a taste of the success, they're willing to listen the very next meeting. So you have to make sure you're humble. So if you have success, if you go in tooting your own horn too much, you're not going to buy any support there. What you have to do is be able to say, I think I can translate the previous success to the next line item on the list. And then if you can get buy-in, then at that point, you become a leader, right? And now you're effectively a change agent and you can apply the formula to the next thing.
Yeah, I'm trying to get into the underlying motivation of what it feels like to be in that position, because you have a choice you can make. You could either just be happy with the things as the way they are and just go and do your job. But yet there's something that's driving you to sort of do it differently. So what is it that you're really feeling motivated by in that position?
Honestly, I think the feeling is the same feeling that you have when you just walk out. You know, you're at a company, you're so frustrated, you're at the limit, and you know you have options. You know, there's a lot of people with a very lucrative skill set. They can get up and say, you know what, this is just not the place for me. I'm just going to quit right now, and I don't care about the repercussions. And that takes a lot of courage and motivation to do. So the same effort that it takes to do that, sometimes you say, no, I'm going to stay here and fix those issues one by one. And that same feeling that you have, like, I don't care if I get fired because I'm already gone anyway. Like, I won't work here under the current circumstances. Either A, I'm going to get fired, or B, I quit. Or A, I'm going to take so much risk to fix it wholesale that if it fails and I get fired because it failed, it won't matter to me because I didn't care as much. So I think once you've convinced yourself that it doesn't matter the end result, and you generally really want to fix the problem, so you're not afraid anymore. You say, you know what, I'm going to fix this. And people look at you like, that's crazy. Why would you put yourself in the line of fire here? You can actually just do what everyone else is doing, respond to the on-call pages, do your best on the bridge, and call it a day and swing the on-call to the next person. So when you decide to take this, I mean, I think there's some parts of it that are kind of selfish. You want to build your resume too. Instead of just being all talk, you want to be able to say, yes, I fixed that thing. So it takes a lot of those emotions and saying, I'm going to solve this problem. This will be my legacy here. And that attitude is kind of gives you that motivation when everyone thinks you're crazy or no one wants to help, that you'll see it through. So I think at the deep end, you got to be very focused. You can't fix all the problems. For example, you'll be in a situation where there's a team that's responsible for doing QA work, and you may not like the way they QA the product because every time it gets to production, it breaks. And there's maybe a release team that actually puts the best on this. And you can't necessarily get too concerned with each of those roles. You got to figure out where you are in the pipeline. And before you try to fix their problem, you got to make sure that you're solid. And I think being laser focused and having that same emotion we talked about earlier lets you just see it through. It's blinding in some ways because you're just kind of having tunnel vision until you solve the problem.
And what were some of the other results that you got personally from being involved as being a change agent? Because, you know, there's obviously business results, but what other personal rewards did you find by really taking these risks of putting your career on the line in some ways?
I think once you do that once, you have the courage to go to any other company and just see it for what it is. Like, all right, every company has problems. I've seen this before. And then you know how to be pragmatic about it. First of all, you know how much work it takes to actually make the change actually happen. So you're a little bit more calculated in what you assume to take on. And then when you go to like conferences or IT events and you start talking to real people and you can talk from experience. So it's not like you're a salesman or you're on the marketing team and just making things up. You're seriously like, this is what I've done in the past. And you can almost talk about it at every detail. Like, yes, you will be up late at night doing this by yourself and no one will know all the hard work you put in. So if it fails, yes, you will get no reward nor credit. And being able to talk from that avenue has a much better conversation than buzzwords. Like, well, maybe you could do X. Doesn't have as much power as I did exactly X and it took about 18 months. So yeah, in a naive conversation, you believe you can do something in 3 months. But with a little bit of experience tossed in, it brings a lot of, I guess, personal respect between your peers. They know you've done it. They know you kind of speak from a position of experience. And then when you start communicating about other aspects of your industry, people will kind of treat you as an authoritative figure and say, wow, this guy knows what he's talking about. Trust me, I've worked with him before. I've seen his work, or I've heard about his work.
Yeah, there seems to be a little interesting paradox where the more that you automate, the more that you could potentially have an even more catastrophic, having one thing go down, taking everything down, but it'd be sort of the perspective of being able to get it back up quickly. But maybe talk about that journey as the more and more automate, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Well, the truth about automation is if you figure out a way of doing something, you know, let's say you come up with a new drink formula, you could be the only person that knows how to make that particular beverage. And you could be the person that takes all the orders and processes them and does the mix. And if you're not around, then the assembly line stops. So anytime you have a good idea, you want to make sure that it could be replicated even when you're not around. Because to be honest, you just want to move on to the next problem. So if you take it back to the landscape of IT, if you figure out how to improve the deployment system, you don't want to build a better Word doc. You just want to build a better process. And so people get into the habit of building better conveyor belts or better machines are the people that get to go on and focus on the next problem. So I think by today's standards, automation is par for course. Like if it's not automated, it almost doesn't count, right? If you can do it manually, that's cool. You know, I'll look at it. But if it isn't automated, it's not something we can actually use, right? It just brings in more people and then people still have to be careful. So most people at this point should be building better machines, not better runbooks.
And having been involved with the financial services industry, and you look back at what type of change that you were able to bring, how would you quantify that you were able to bring what business value by being a change agent within that context?
Yeah, I think you just got to know where you're at. Like if you're at a startup, they're very open to risk. You know, it's part of their business. It's why usually a lot of startups exist. They're not there to go and do a slow grind. They want to be risky. And if you have ideas for change, you'll see those take effect immediately. You know, you can have an idea and see it turn into a product tomorrow. If you had a more established company that's been around 20, 30 years, then it's going to probably be a more calculated cycle. But it's the same mindset going in, right? There's an idea, there's a problem to solve, and you solve the problem. My personal thing was, in the financial industry, when things go wrong on a deployment, meaning things are down, there's SLAs tied to it. And a lot of times, if you talk to someone on the exec team about a deployment going bad, they don't really care too much. You know, they have the personnel and staff on hand to handle that sort of thing. Managers handle the scheduling and rotation to make sure people aren't too tired. And if it doesn't affect the bottom line too much, it's not a big problem. It's just what people are paid to deal with. But when it starts impacting the bottom line, regardless of people, maybe no one's tired, maybe there's enough headcount, but we're still going down regardless. And the customers call and say, well, that was a $200,000 charge. And at that point, there's a real dollar amount that the people higher up that didn't have concern before, it becomes the topic of the executive meeting. And usually when something as simple as deploying an application or doing an upgrade becomes a topic at an exec meeting, then you have enough support, period, to solve the problem. One way of doing that is by trying to hire more people, usually doesn't cut it. So the payoff is problem goes away, the bottom line looks better the next quarter or the next month because there are less chargebacks. That's very easy to quantify, right? Before we had this improved process, we were spending about $1.2 million in SLA violations and chargebacks. With the new process, we don't do that anymore. And then, you know, sometimes that bleeds over into customer satisfaction. If the uptime is much higher, the perception is that the service is more stable. And if it's more stable, then we want to do more business with you. So in financial industry, it's very common for your vendors to split their workloads across multiple providers to make sure that they have some protection from one going under. And maybe they do a 70-30 split instead of a 50-50 split, and then revenues go up. So then you start gathering more support. So for a lot of times, I think if you can affect the bottom line, which is really hard, a lot of times people don't have view into what's affecting the bottom line. But sometimes if things are on fire, there's a high chance that the service being down, especially if you're a hosted product, a Spotify or something like that, guaranteed without a doubt, people will tell you that downtime for them is causing them to go to another service. Very easy. Fix that problem, and then you'll make an impact on the company.
What were some of the things that you saw would come up a lot in terms of obstacles that you were facing?
Just the normal stuff you see with people in general, right? Most companies of a large size have hierarchies. You know, there's employees or individual contributors and call them line engineers. And then you have like middle managers and directors and VPs. And a lot of times, the higher up you go, you know, you're expected to have some of the leadership qualities. And sometimes people confuse leadership with having all the ideas versus fostering a team that can produce ideas. And I think when you have that mismatch, it makes it really hard. If you come up with an idea that no one in the last 5 years even thought of suggesting to fix the problem, and you solve the problem with that idea, that can make people very uncomfortable. And I don't think that's unique to IT, that's just people in general. Anytime you have a hierarchy of leadership, and if that leadership is defined by you're the idea person, without you, we won't be able to be successful. And sometimes if change comes from the bottom up, you start to disrupt that idea that you need this particular leader in order for the company to be successful. And I think that's the biggest challenge. So you can get into a meeting, and even if you had previous success, you want to apply the natural formula to the next problem. And another group may say, well, we don't want to do it that way. And there's no technical reason why, it's just that we feel we don't want to do it that way. There's no really logical discussion you can have in that case. So in those cases, you just almost have to wait until they ask you for help or someone else break the tie. So really people, I think, are the largest barrier to actually making anything happen. And sometimes you have to be clever with that, where you give a way for other people to be involved in the success, even if they had nothing to do with it. So if you do have a successful new process deployed, the first thing you gotta do is mention a bunch of people, or it was a team effort. And it can't be generic where people are, oh, of course you're gonna say it's a team effort. You may have to call out specifics or give people a specific thing that they can do to be a part of the success. So maybe people on your team can't code. Maybe they can't do development. That's okay. They can do something else to contribute to the success. And then you may have to tell them exactly what they did to make this project successful. You covering on call for an extra iteration allowed this other person to finish up the code to do the automated deployment process. So while you didn't write the code, you gave the proper cover and the time required to get it done. It doesn't happen without you doing what you did. And then people start to understand there's various roles to play and they all matter. And it's up to the person causing change or that change agent to make that very clear. And at the end of the day, we talked about it earlier, the change agent should look like a bunch of people on the team. So different people will say, hey, we have this problem. I volunteer to do 3 weeks in a row of being on call so that this other person can solve the problem. But what I expect is once I do this 3 weeks in a row, that problem is solved. So now you have different people on the team understanding what it takes for them to also be a change agent and have the same impact as everyone else.
Yeah, it sounds like there's quite a lot of coalition building to not go it alone, but to really have a network of support.
Exactly. And I played sports like throughout my, you know, from middle school through high school. And you kind of see this with the structure of a sports team. When you're a coach, you know you're not going to get in the game. You're not going to play. It's not your job to play. It's not your job to be faster than anyone else. So you can actually just focus on making sure that the team is successful. That's it. And that's very rewarding to know that's all your responsibility is, and you're not going to be judged the same way as the quarterback. So just having that hierarchy and knowing that, you know, different people have different roles, and just being excited when they win at their particular position, then you win, right? You know, the coach saying, well, I called all the right plays, doesn't win the game. And I think some people, maybe they don't have that in their experience where they've seen someone else just be successful and they helped them be successful and they were happy with that. I think one of the best quotes I've seen was, it's amazing what people can do when no one cares who gets the credit, because then people are just focused.
Yeah, and it seems like part of the dynamic as well is like you could ask for permission, or you could just do it and ask for forgiveness, or to kind of at least get to the point where you're able to show some sort of concrete change. So I'm curious, in your experience of doing that, of the paths that you've taken, whether or not you're asking for permission to do it, or you just do it and then start to incrementally chip away at the problem one slice at a time.
Yeah, if you're in an organization that's obviously having problems, there's not a lot of permission you can ask for. People don't even know what to agree on. It's just as simple as that. So I think, honestly, you almost have to make the bet that, listen, I'm going to have to ask for forgiveness. And usually, there's not much to forgive. It didn't work, so it didn't make it to production, whatever. So I think the whole permission thing is, some people will say, I'm paid 9 to 5, and I will only do what I'm paid to do, and no more. And the permission aspect there is, I want my boss to come and tell me that the thing I'm being paid for 9 to 5 is to make things better by doing something different than what the day job or what I got hired for. And that's what some people consider permission, right? You told me that I can go off the rails and think differently about my job day to day. And some people won't act without that permission. So I think in this context, when we're saying ask for forgiveness, adjust your own title a little bit. So if you're the bill manager and you really think we should be using a much better build tool, then set it up on the side. Ask for a little bit of gear from the person that can give you the gear and not their manager that has to approve the gear. Get the gear, put the new system in place, and then since you know the build process the best, just make sure that it works and can actually replace it. And then set yourself up for success by making sure you can replace it. And make sure that you also maybe don't burn the bridge too early where you can always roll back. And then you have to make the bet. You have to go into the meeting unprompted and say, hey, I would like to move to a new build system. And then, of course, people will say, there's no time where everything's on fire. Like, I understand that. That's why it's already done. I've been working on it for the past 2 months. Here it is. I would just like to show you guys how it works. And I'm not asking for any investment on your part. I already did the first part. All I need you to do is see it and believe that I can actually get it over the finish line with minimal effort from you. And that's where you start asking for forgiveness. Like, you have to forgive me for going off the rails and spending my extra time on a better solution. And at that point, that's how you actually make change without waiting for permission.
And finally, with the last 10 years, the space of IT has been going through quite a lot of changes. And in that change, there's been a whole new ecosystem of tools and technologies that people are learning and starting to use. And so maybe you could just sort of comment in terms of what type of advice you would give to people in this sort of context of all these tools that are available for them to be the best change agent that they can be.
Right. I mean, I think you said the perfect word. It's just a tool, right? Some people don't need all the tools. Sometimes you just need a hammer. Just use a hammer. Don't go and find an automatic jackhammer thingy if that's not what you need. Kind of really figure out what you need. And I think what we're seeing now with the collection of tools, because it is much easier to build tools these days. And it's much easier to build a new tool and get other people to learn about the tool. Hacker News, Twitter, GitHub repositories. There's so many ways to introduce something new into people's work streams. And it's so easy now for people to even try it out. I think even most open source developers have figured out UX in a way. It needs to be easy to download. There needs to be some initial documentation and people need to get it in 10 minutes. So with this plethora of tools that we have at our disposal, you have to be sure you understand what problem you're trying to solve. Some people will look at the tool and say, huh, how can I map that tool internally? It doesn't make sense. It's pretty backwards. What you probably want to do is figure out, like, remember, I always talk about the line items. You need to know what your company's pain points are. And if you can find a tool that gives you a good starting point for solving it, you want to bring in that tool. And then also talk to other people. I think for me in the last, I guess, decade of being in my career, just learning from other people, right? Experience helps so much. You know, I have this problem. Here's how I'm attempting to solve it. Please poke holes in it. And they'll say, well, have you thought about this? Or have you seen this? Or here's the way we've been doing it. And give yourself time to be wrong and give yourself time to adjust and don't get married to anything, because while it solves the current problem, that's all you could see at that time. That was what was in front of you. And once you solve that problem, you'll be able to look ahead and say, oh, wow, that was just the starting point. And maybe there's a different tool that I need to actually finish the job.
Is there anything else that's left unsaid that you'd like to say?
I mean, have courage. You know, it's not for everyone to be the first person that comes up with a good idea and see it all the way through. That's usually not the way it works, right? I mean, there's a difference between, you know, there's leaders and there's followers. And no one really wants to talk about what do you do as a follower, right? I don't really hear a lot of conversation around, you're a follower. How can you be a really good follower? And it sounds bad, but it's really not. If someone has the courage to be a change agent and they will put the ideas on the line to solve a real problem, if you're on the other side of that, right, we can call it follower, or you're the person that has to assist in that vision actually coming through, you actually have to ask yourself, can you actually commit to the idea? Vet the idea, ask questions. So if this new idea comes up in a meeting, at that point, you have to ask yourself, can you get on board with it? Ask the right questions. If you're on the fence about it, figure out how can you get off the fence and on board. And then figure out what you can contribute. You know, let that person know, these are the skills I have, here's what I'm comfortable doing, and here's how I can take part of it. So I think more conversation around what do the people that aren't change agents need to do in order to enable more people to become change agents or be successful at it, because I think eventually being a part and seeing how that works, usually you end up creating new change agents by just making sure they're a part of a successful project.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Kelsey.
Cool. Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for listening in today. I hope that you will join us again next time.
Mm-hmm.